This episode of the Ringer NFL Show is brought to you by CBS Sports HQ. If you follow the pod, you know we love analysis and information. We don't yell at each other. We don't throw out hot takes. We don't beat the same topics into the ground. That's how CBS Sports HQ does things too. It's a sports network that streams live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they're focused on bringing you the latest news, highlights, stats, game previews, game reactions, fantasy advice, and gambling picks. No fake debates, no politics, no made-up drama. It's just sports for real sports fans. The best part, you get all of this for free. I don't mean a free trial or part of some special cable package. It's legitimately free for everybody. You don't even need a login. Just open the CBS Sports app and watch anytime, anywhere, on your phone or at home, on your Apple TV, Roku, or Fire TV. It couldn't be easier. So download the CBS Sports app and watch CBS Sports HQ today. Today's episode is also brought to you by 20th Century Fox's new film, Ad Astra. Brad Pitt stars as Roy McBride, an astronaut who travels to the outer edges of the solar system to find his missing father and unravel a mystery that threatens the survival of our planet. His journey will uncover secrets that challenge the nature of human existence and our place in the cosmos. Ad Astra, in theaters September 20th. The fate of humanity depends on one man. James Gray, you should definitely see this movie. If you haven't seen his other ones, you are certainly missing out. Welcome to the Ringer NFL Show. I'm Robert Mays, joined as always by Kevin Clark. Kevin, how you doing, buddy?
First regular season Thursday.
Yeah.
How you feel?
I'm excited. I feel good because I love preparing for this show because it involves a lot of going back and rewatching games and learning some stuff that I didn't see the first time, all that. So I'm excited to dig into it. We're going to do the same format as last year. We're going to start off with some headlines. We're going to get into Take Shop. We're going to do the biggest three games of the week. We're going to talk about...
We also have the best player in football on the show today.
We also have the best player in football on the show today. We will be joined later by Aaron Donald for a wide-ranging interview that lasted, I don't know, 10 minutes, but it was wide-ranging. He's the best player in the NFL, so it's good to get him on the show. We'll have that coming up at the end. Before that, though, you got headlines, the biggest games of the week, Take Shop. I will geek out. Kevin will give his sneaky truth, and then we will pick our Thursday night winner and talk about that game very briefly. So before we get into all of that, let's start with the biggest headline in the NFL right now, and that is the Antonio Brown rape allegations that came out earlier this week. Here is what we know so far. There was a civil suit filed in Florida by Brown's ex-trainer, Brittany Taylor. It alleges that during multiple incidents in 2017 and 18, that Brown sexually assaulted her and also sent menacing text messages after the fact that really, you know, kind of seemed to illuminate what might have happened if those text messages did happen. So that's where we're at right now. He has not been suspended. He is currently playing for the Patriots. It seems like the commissioner's exempt list is a possibility, as it's been in other cases in the past that have been a little bit unsettled at that point. So we really don't know what else to say at this current juncture. You know, he is slated to play, and until the Patriots put out a statement earlier this week saying the NFL will conduct an investigation. So Kevin, I don't know if you want to say anything else about this, but it seems like that's where we're at right now, and I'm not sure what else there is to kind of get into right now before anything else happens.
The commissioner's exempt list is an interesting situation here, because in the past those have been criminal investigations or pending charges. You know, I think that everyone learned about the commissioner exempt list when it was first really used, which was in 2014, when you had a string of league-wide domestic violence incidents. That would be Ray Rice and then Greg Hardy. Ray McDonald was involved there. Adrian Peterson at one point.
Adrian Peterson later on. Yep.
Adrian Peterson later on. And so this is separate from that because it's a civil lawsuit. This is a player who joined his new team, you know, on Monday, and this news came on Tuesday. It is a very, very strange situation from a football standpoint, because it's just he practiced on Wednesday. We didn't know if he was going to practice. We don't know if he's going to play on Sunday, or even if he, you know, even regardless of this stuff, it would have been a strange process to get him ready for Sunday. So what happens on Sunday? I don't think we're going to know anything before actives or inactives come out on Sunday. I mean, do you agree?
Yeah, I feel like we're going to have to wait for any more clarity on the situation on a lot of different levels.
I truly do not know what the Patriots will do. And I don't think there's any use in speculating exactly where they're going to come from, because we've seen them. This is a completely different situation from anything they've been involved in from a getting ready for Sunday type of aspect.
Yeah. Again, there's not a lot that we can kind of untangle right now. And we'll know more as it goes forward. We'll talk about it more as more information comes out, as we see what the Patriots do. I'm sure we will address it on Sunday, you know, depending on whether he plays or not. But until then, we're going to get to some of the other news of the week. A lot of it is injury related, Kevin. You know, we had several kind of bigger name injuries that happened during week one. We can start with Malik Jackson, you know, a pretty high profile addition for the Eagles in the offseason after he was cut by the Jaguars. His Lisfranc injury will put him out for maybe the entire season, most likely the entire season.
I mean, he's on IR.
He's on IR, and it's unlikely he'll return with that sort of injury. So you're looking at kind of a dicey scenario with Philadelphia now, because even though they have depth at that spot, you know, Timmy Jernigan slots in, it's totally understandable. They signed Akeem Spence on the 19th to, what day is it right now?
The 12th.
So, I mean, it was August 19th. They signed him at some point after he was released by Miami. So, you know, they have depth at that spot. But one of the issues for Philly coming into this season was they didn't have much depth at their defensive end positions, which was kind of counterintuitive when you consider how the team was built in recent years. They were really relying on this interior pass rush in a way they haven't before. And even though Brandon Graham and Derek Barnett were both excellent on Sunday, you still kind of wonder if one of those guys goes down and this interior pass rush isn't what we thought, what's going to happen to this defense?
Yeah, I mean, the thing I look at it from the Eagles' perspective is we said on this podcast a week ago they had the deepest roster in the NFL. The reason you get a deep roster is because you get guys like Malik Jackson for $10 million a year. You get those sort of luxury items that other teams don't have. When you start losing those guys, you get closer and closer and closer to being just another roster. And so, look, I think they looked pretty good, certainly in the second half against the Redskins. But I think that I think the Malik Jackson injury is a real worry going forward.
Yeah, especially because it seems like there was some question marks in the secondary, especially early in the game.
Yep.
You know, the Redskins had some real shot plays that were available to them. McLaurin scored on the first one, and then he had another one that probably could have been another touchdown if Keenum didn't miss it. So, you know, there's, with the secondary being unsettled and now the depth being somewhat of a concern on the inside, it's something to monitor going forward. I think they'll be okay, you know, one or two more injuries and things start to get pretty problematic. All right. Tyreek Hill set to be out 4 to 6 weeks with a clavicle injury. We talked a little bit about it on Sunday. Yeah, he was forced to go to the hospital just because it was kind of a unique injury. Again, I think both of us feel like they're going to be okay. You slot Hardman in there with the way that Watkins looked. I just feel like this is a team that was set up to lose a guy on offense. I mean, even if it's a guy that really takes the top off the defense, because they have so much speed elsewhere.
Yeah, we'll see how long the injury is. It was obviously extremely extenuating circumstance as far as him having to stay overnight in the hospital. Again, this goes back to something that Brett Veach told me last month. I mentioned this in Sunday's podcast. I'll mention it again. There are not a lot of quarterbacks who can take advantage of 4-3 speed. Patrick Mahomes is one of those guys. He can throw the ball 80 yards in the air. He can do this stuff. So you plug in Hardman in the short term. Things can still happen with him. This is not a reason to panic, and I think that the offense will be fine without him.
I mean,
I don't think they're going to score. You know, I think that he will. Hill's injury will hurt, but they're not going to start scoring. They're going to become the Bears.
When you look at their Chiefs offense, you think of Hill as this speed element that takes the top off and kind of changes the geometry of how the rest of the defense works, right? It's similar to having a great three-point shooter. I've made that analogy many times. The difference, though, is that Hill has that Steph Curry element to him where he does the things a small guy doesn't normally do on top of changing that geometry. He's an excellent jump ball contested catch receiver. So even if you have a guy that can shape the defense how you want with the speed, you still aren't going to have those shot plays available to the same degree, because I don't think Mecole Hardman is the type of player that can make the contested catches that Tyreek Hill has in the past.
How many players on the Chiefs are we going to compare to Steph Curry?
I only compare one to Steph Curry. That's always the analogy I make.
No, but I meant the broader we, which is everyone, including myself, compares Patrick Mahomes to Steph Curry.
Oh, that's interesting. I always think about speed and shooting is very similar. Sure. So that's what the comparison that I've always made.
Sure, I'm going to compare Chris Jones to Steph Curry.
All right, let's stay in that division with a team that, Jesus Christ, man, the Chargers are fucking cursed.
Oh, God.
I mean, I just can't. I made the joke yesterday. It's like 20 years from now, Philip Rivers is still going to be the starting quarterback, and every single guy on that team is just going to be crumbling in front of him.
I said, Hunter Henry. Remember when I didn't know if Antonio Gates was on the Chargers and then just said, just give it a minute?
Yeah, he'll be there. Yeah, in 20 years, Rivers is going to be the quarterback, and Antonio Gates is going to trot out of retirement in week three. It's just nuts. So here we are again. Hunter Henry has a broken leg, and he will be out indefinitely. He's on IR. He may not be back this season. So we're talking 2 years in a row where the starting tight end that was going to be a huge part of their passing offense is gone by the second week of the year. Last year's in the preseason. Now it's after week one. I mean, this team cannot catch a break. I mean, it's just nuts.
It upsets me from Hunter Henry's standpoint, for sure.
Me too. I feel bad for the guy. I mean, it reminds me of Tyler Eifert. I mean, just such a terrible thing to have to deal with every single year when you have these fluke injuries.
I'm with you. This is his fourth season. He played 15 games and 14 games, and now he's going to play 0 and 1 games. And it's unfortunate because I think he could have been such a dynamic player in this particular version of the Chargers. And, you know, now all of a sudden, they don't have Melvin Gordon. As you said, you know, the injury bug has been just incredible this year. Derwin James. It is, at this point, I'm very, very, very close to canceling the Chargers.
I thought they looked really good on Sunday. I forget how well coached they are offensively.
Absolutely. And I think Philip Rivers is a great, great, great quarterback. I think he's an elite quarterback. But at some point, you just don't have a roster.
Yeah. There's a point of no return. And I think that with the offensive line, we're very close to it. And if you start losing a couple weapons, then, yeah, man, it gets real dicey really quick. Okay. Again, staying in the AFC West, Jonathan Abram is going to IR with a shoulder injury. That defense looked pretty darn good against the Broncos for stretches of last week. And, you know, this is a problem because I don't know what they're going to do. It seems like safety is a deep spot for them because they had Abram, Joyner, and Carl Joseph. Mm-hmm. But Marcus Joyner is their slot cornerback. So how does this work then? Do you move Joyner to free safety when you're in nickel situations and you move like Daryl Worley inside and have Trayvon Mullen, the rookie, come in on the outside? He struggled when Gerrion Conley wasn't playing last week. So I don't know what the answer is here. And we talked about this all offseason that having a deep, flexible secondary is the number one element of any defense at this point. And they just lost a huge piece in that.
Yep. I mean, the flexible secondary thing, it's really interesting to me. I asked Dan Quinn in the preseason what defenses do to catch up with offenses. And he says, you know what they do? Everything, there's so much at the line now on offense that you basically need to be as adaptable pre-snap as they are. And
yes.
And that's kind of what fascinates me now is it's just the cat and mouse game to sort of figure out how to do that. And having, as you said, a deep and flexible secondary is a huge, huge step towards that. So huge loss for the Raiders. I think that, you know, coming off that win, which we'll get to in a few minutes about the Raiders. But it's a tough one. I think that the Raiders young core, I'm oddly intrigued to see what they look like. And this hurts.
Yeah, you'd like to see that defense healthy because this is the best part of their defense is what they have on the back end. I think the pass rush still has questions. I think there's still questions at linebacker, even with Perfect playing well last week. So this hurts. I mean, this is a blow to them for sure. Let's get to one last bit of semi-late breaking news here. The Jets quarterback is apparently a 14-year-old junior high student who was making out with someone at a party. This is unbelievable. Mm. Sam Darnold has mono. And he will miss multiple weeks.
Dude, can we talk about how Twitter briefly became just a clearinghouse of people just saying, I had mono once?
Yeah, it
was
great.
That? It was like 2 hours of people being like, well, when I was 17, it's like, okay, we got it. We got it.
Did you ever have mono?
No.
No, I never did either. It sounds terrible. I was lucky to escape my adolescence without ever having to deal with it. Sam Darnold, not so lucky. I mean, he's almost an adolescent still. So, I mean, the jokes about how he might have gotten this are funny, but from the Jets' perspective, this is brutal.
Well, he might be out till week 5.
Yes. So their bye is in week 4, and it seems like from what Gase was saying that's kind of the plan right now. And you bring in Trevor Siemian, but I mean, we're 2 weeks into the season, man. This season that was supposed to be sort of promising for the Jets, and this shit has already gone off the rails. I just... Being a Jets, Mets, and Knicks fan, like our boss Sean Fennessy is, I just cannot even imagine that life.
We've got a lot of those around the ringer. Yeah, it's not what you want. I'm going to talk about the Jets a little bit in Take Shop, but this is just as bad as it gets, because the expectations for Darnold, especially around Jets fans, were so high.
And reasonably so.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest disconnect, I had a lot of Jets fans just oddly mad at me over the offseason, and I think the biggest disconnect is within that fan base, there were two things that I disagreed with them on. It was just sort of, we weren't speaking the same language, and that's why I was sort of confused what their arguments were. But I got it after a while. It was that, A, they thought, a lot of them thought Le'Veon Bell was just an awesome signing, which there's a case he made for the money that they paid him that it was. But, you know, we're not going to do running back value again, but like, come on.
Yeah, it was fine.
It was fine. And they also, there was just this incredible sense of optimism that Darnold was going to get into the tippy top of the elite of quarterbacks. And I thought that maybe, I mean, who knows, but not really. Like, I just didn't see that coming. But it's certainly not coming if you're out for 3 weeks with fucking mono.
And you're trying to figure out a new system and settle in.
I just want
to
say, I've
players.
Been trying. I don't really curse on this show. It's sparing. And I've tried to certainly never do it. And this story just made me do it. And the Jets. Yeah, the Jets.
I wish I had that level of self-control. Unfortunately, I do not. All right. Let's move on. We could talk about that for way too long. Let's get to Take Shop.
Cursing or the Jets or both?
Both. Let's get to Take Shop. If you're unfamiliar with the segment, this is a take that we're working on. We're tinkering with it. We're not sure if it's all the way there yet, but it's in process. So, Kevin, why don't you kick us off this year?
All right. It is a continuation of this Jets conversation. I want to read this tweet from Andy Vasquez, beat writer out there. So Sam Darnold out indefinitely with mono. Le'Veon Bell is getting an MRI on his shoulder. He is out of practice. CJ Mosley with a groin. Quinnen Williams with an ankle, not practicing. And the Jets have already lost starters Quincy Enunwa and Avery Williamson for the season. It's week 1.5 of...
It's not great.
...of the Jets. Is there a case to be made that this is Take Shop. We're just throwing it out there and then we're going to workshop it. Is there a case to be made that this is just going to be the beginning of the end of Adam Gase's terrible tenure in New York?
The reason I would say that that's possible is because they hired Joe Douglas and right. Because now the power structure has changed since Adam Gase got there. It would not shock me if after a disaster season, he were fired.
I think that also, I will say this. I think that this sort of injury bad luck, and I guess you call it injury bad luck with Sam Darnold's mono, but certainly if Lev Bell has a shoulder, if Quinnen Williams can't play, CJ Mosley can't play, whatever, I do think there's a situation in which that helps him, especially with Darnold.
Sure.
Especially with Darnold, because his whole thing was, let's fix Sam Darnold, or not fix Sam Darnold, but let's get him to the elite of quarterbacks. If he's sick for 3 weeks and then doesn't really regain the weight and isn't himself, maybe you give him a mulligan and bring him back another year and give him maybe higher expectations. I can see this going either way.
Yeah, I could see it going either way. I think that if they go 2-14, there is a lot of justification to get rid of him, and there's reasons to do it because, one, like we said, the power structure has changed, and two, they're a team in this weird limbo where they're not very good, but they've spent all their money. I mean, they have $6 million in cap space after trading for Demaryius Thomas. So it's not as if they're this rebuding team that can have a lot of patience in whatever the results are.
They're the Texans with more draft picks.
They're the Texans with more draft picks and a way worse team.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't... I'll be curious to see how it ends up working out.
A worse quarterback.
Oh, definitely a worse quarterback. I mean, Deshaun Watson's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Sam Darnold was not that yet.
I don't know why I said probably there.
Yes, he's definitely a worse quarterback.
I think I have PTSD from that weekend where I got ratioed by Jets fans for saying they're going to waste Sam Darnold. It was so weird.
If the Browns can't get it together this week, man, then they have serious problems. I mean, Myles Garrett was really good last week. I thought their pass rush was really good last week against a team that used a ton of max protect, things like that, to kind of slow them down. I feel like against that Jets offensive line, who got kind of beat up by Buffalo last week, this could be a problem day for Trevor Siemian.
Oh, this could be a problem day for Trevor Siemian. This is the one. This is the week where Trevor Siemian may not play well.
I loved Roger Sherman's tweet earlier today about how Trevor Siemian, Northwestern star Trevor Siemian, who had more touchdowns and interceptions in 75% of his college seasons.
You love to see it. Northwestern quarterbacks are just oddly just around a lot. Mike Kafka is going to be the new Andy Reid in 5 years.
Oh, man. Wow. There's a couple of them that have like bounced around for longer than you would have thought. All right, let's get to mine. After kind of observing the league over the last couple days and kind of taking stock of everything, I think that with the Cowboys offense, the way it looks right now, they might be the second best team in the NFC.
Behind the Philadelphia Eagles.
But behind the Eagles. I know the Saints played well. The Saints played very well on Monday. You know, they're dangerous. They're very complete. I was not impressed with the Rams. I don't think the Rams played very well against Carolina. I think they got several breaks in that game.
Okay. I think they did as well.
You think they didn't play that well?
I agree with you. They did not play that well. But but keep going on your point, and then I'll get to mine.
I think that the number one question I had about Dallas was whether they could really lock into a modern offense that unlocked every single person on their offense.
Yep.
And I think they have. When you look at their approach during that game, it's as drastically different from what it was last year as you can possibly be. They used 25.8% more pre-snap motion than they did last season on it, like for the entire year. Dak's play action rate was 46.9%. That includes a lot of RPOs, everything else. But on those plays, he was 14 of 15 for 13.8 yards per attempt. Inject that right into my bloodstream. This is the exact type of offense I love, and to see them use it with a lot of good players is awesome. I understand the Giants part of this, but I still feel like, to me, the approach was the most important thing, and I just think their roster is loaded. All right, tell me that they beat the Giants and it doesn't matter.
No, I'm not going to tell you that, because then my Lamar Jackson like thoughts are illegitimate. If you can beat an NFL team like that, you're good.
Yeah.
I want to go back to what I said on Sunday. With the Dolphins in particular, you had Minkah Fitzpatrick there, Xavier Howard. They weren't an AAF team. Like, this is not, and the Giants are even better than that. I'm not saying the Giants are the 85 Bears here, but what I am saying is that their defense has NFL players, and the ability to do that is good. I mean, the helplessness on offense with the Giants is just like the quarterback position. Everything else is like NFL kind of replacement level or better.
With the Cowboys, it's a few different things. It's the offense, which again, on every single level, the just even small stuff, not even crazy RPO play action motion stuff. There was a play in the third quarter where they had like a 3rd and 7 and they had a bunch formation on the right, and they released Cobb late from it and got a nice little man-beating route on 3rd and 7 for a first down.
Yeah.
They never used to do that stuff. They never used to use formation and alignment and receiver splits to their advantage. It's little tiny incremental improvements that are really nice to see. And when you combine that with the line and the receiver talent that they seem to have right now with Gallup becoming the player that he is, when you look at teams that are set to regress, to me, the most important things to do if the roster is pretty stagnant and pretty similar is improve yourself schematically, which they've done, and it's to get steps forward from your young players. For Gallup to look like he did, for Jordan Lewis to play as well as he did, stuff like that, I just think makes this team really frightening.
Okay, so here was actually the point I was going to make. The Rams did not look as good as they had looked in last year's playoffs or whatever, but I want to address just week one in September in general. The Rams essentially do training camp with no preseason games. They've kind of perfected the load management thing. I actually asked Aaron Donald about this later in the show. Not that we don't just have that live and we don't, I'm not suggesting we pre-recorded the Aaron Donald interview, but if we did, I did ask him about the load management stuff. Something I talked to coaches all training camp about, but I think that it is really hard right now, and I know that I said this about the Patriots, and the Patriots just pasted the Steelers. It is really hard to figure out what elite teams are going to look like in midseason in September because of the way teams treat training camp and the preseason. I agree with you. The Cowboys look really freaking good. The Cowboys look like a playoff team. I think that Kellen Moore, as we've talked about, I've had a journey with Kellen Moore to the point that now in preseason I was pretty hyped about him, maybe I wasn't excited about the hire in general to begin with. But I think that there is some real promise there. I think that I agree with you. They have a chance to be in the elite of the NFL. but I'm withholding judgment on any and all sort of teams we've seen at the elite level in the past couple of years until, you know, Halloween.
Yeah, it's week one and it's Take Shop. I mean, it's just obviously it's week one. It's Take Shop.
Let's ride.
But I mean, it's at a certain point, you know, it's you. The games all matter, and there's only 16 of them,
sure
and
do.
They looked phenomenal. I'm not taking week one victory laps here, but I will say that the Kellen Moore hire and the Kellen Moore plan and everything I thought about it coming in, I was pumped about, and it was exactly what I wanted to see. I mean, this dude is just doing Chris Peterson stuff with an NFL offense and with an NFL offense that has a ton of talent. So I'm excited about it moving forward. We'll see what happens with the Rams, the Saints, the entire kind of power structure in the NFC. But I feel like a week in, you know, Dallas definitely deserves mention. Before we move on, let's take a quick break. Today's episode is brought to you by Floor & Decor. Don't miss out. Floor & Decor is the only one-stop flooring shop that keeps general contractors, flooring specialists, and renovation experts ahead of the game. Thanks to their fully stocked warehouse of hard surface flooring, no job is too big. Job lot quantities of tile, wood, and stone are in stock and available for convenient worksite delivery. Also, their dedicated pro services team is here to help make it easy for you to run your business, offering everything from 14-day product storage to financing solutions to express pickup. Sign up for Pro Premier Rewards and you'll automatically rack up points that you can exchange for prizes. Plus, you'll have access to over 15 discounted services to help you grow your business. Explore your local Floor & Decor and discover how quality flooring products at everyday low prices can completely change your game. Visit flooranddecor.com today to locate the Floor & Decor nearest you and score savings and service you can't find anywhere else. That's flooranddecor.com. Have you ever had to miss a football game because you couldn't get somewhere to watch it? I know that happens to me all the time. You're kicking around on a Thursday night, you're trying to see friends, you have plans with family, and you just can't find a place to watch a game. That never has to happen again with TuneIn, your all-in-one audio app for live sports, news, music, and podcasts. With TuneIn Premium, you can listen to live and on-demand coverage every single game this NFL season. And that's just the beginning. TuneIn also gives you access to every live MLB, NBA, and NHL game, not to mention all your favorite college football teams. TuneIn doesn't just have sports either. You can also get 24-hour news from all the major outlets, over 100 exclusive music channels, and all your top podcasts, especially the Ringer NFL Show and all of our other podcasts on the Ringer Podcast Network. For a limited time, go to TuneIn.com/RingerNFL to get TuneIn Premium for 50% off. That's half off, guys. It's TuneIn.com/RingerNFL. Take live sports, music, news, and podcasts wherever you go with TuneIn. Let's get to our biggest three games of the week, and we will start with the NFC Championship game rematch that will be happening in Los Angeles. We talked about it a little bit, you know, just now. I think that the Rams had an uneven start. Coming in, I thought that they would be a different sort of team when you think about their offensive approach. They used a ton of 10 personnel in that game, mm-hmm. A lot of four receivers. I thought it'd be more two tight ends, but Goff was shaky. He did not have a good game and missed a lot of throws. I thought McVay's game plan against Carolina in the second half especially was very good. The types of play action stuff they were using, everything else. A lot of screens to get chunk plays when it was like second and 20 to kind of chew into down and distance situations. In a lot of ways, they were the team that I thought. But again, I thought their offense looked rusty and they're playing a Saints defense that looked, you know, pretty darn good in moments against the Texans and then pretty damn bad in others.
Hey, I want to address this. Where do you come down on Saints fans just still being extremely mad about the NFC Championship game?
Because, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, me too. I'm okay with it too. Go ahead.
Yeah. If you're a game away from the Super Bowl and you have legitimate title aspirations and that's ripped from you for a reason that you can't control and is, you know, total bullshit, to be frank, I can imagine being pissed off a year later.
I also think it was insanely cool that they didn't watch the Super Bowl en masse and that New Orleans was, which is, by the way, when you look at the ratings for both college and pro football, New Orleans usually number one.
It's the best football city in America for the NFL outside of Green Bay. Those are the two to me.
They were the lowest. I actually would throw Cleveland in there.
Cleveland's a good one. I think Pittsburgh is probably in that conversation too. But I've always been blown away when I'm in New Orleans, all the different types of people who are just massive Saints fans.
Sure. I do think part of that is geography because their stadium is right downtown.
Yeah,
and so you get to see a bunch of, when you go to a different stadium and it's just like 5 miles outside the city center, you're not going to see anybody but the fans who are in their jerseys. Whereas when you're in New Orleans, it is such an amazing thing because you can just go through the entire town and see all the people excited for the Saints game.
It's in my opinion, it's not even just like the game day and all that stuff. It's when I'm there for the week and I'm just out somewhere working or like grabbing a beer somewhere at the end of the day and just having conversations with people and just all the types of people who from every industry it's interesting. It's a very interesting fan ecosystem that I think is really different than a lot of places around America.
The one thing I will say about Cleveland is they are like that when the team is like 1-15.
Sure.
Which is, by the way,
that's fair.
Kind of often. There was a moment, I don't know if I told the story, there was a moment in Cleveland when some of the national guys were like, is this training camp attendance normal? Because it was so full for Baker and Odell's first day this year that, and the Browns guys were like, yeah, it's totally normal. Like when they were 2-14, there were still thousands of people watching the first day of training camp when it was basically just Joe Thomas.
I think that's fair. The Browns fans are, they've come out. They have stuck by a lot of shit. So right. I think that they definitely deserve mention.
Let's
talk about this game a little bit more, though.
I want to get you excited.
All right.
Have you seen the PFF grades or just the general play? Because I've seen both of the Saints offensive line.
It was awesome. I wanted to talk about that a little bit. Ryan Ramczyk was fantastic against Watt the other day. And I think that he's definitely going to be in the conversation with Schwartz as the best pass blocking right tackle in the league by the time the season's over. I mean, he was phenomenal. He's definitely an ascending player. He's going to be the highest paid right tackle in the league sometime soon, whenever he gets extended. The thing that jumped out to me, though, that's not surprising. What was surprising is how excellent they were communicating with a rookie center.
Yep.
They were passing off stunts and just really able to handle everything thrown at them. And it's the exact opposite of what happened with the Bears, who have a first-year starting center. They had some issues up front. And I just think it's a testament to how well they're coached and to just how much talent they have up front. And I think that this is a Rams pass rush that looked pretty decent at times against Carolina. You know, Fowler had a decent game. Obviously, you're dealing with Donald. But if there's a line in the league that can deal with that right now, it's the Saints.
Yep, it was the first game in J.J. Watt's career that he didn't have a sack or a quarterback hit or a tackle.
That's impressive. I mean, it's the Breeze getting the ball out. I don't care how fast he's getting the ball out. That's impressive.
That's impressive. So I'm excited to sort. I'm going to turn into you this weekend, and the interplay between the Rams defensive line and the Saints offensive line is really, really intriguing to me. That's one of the things we talked about Aaron Donald a little bit later. Is just. To sack Breeze or to get pressure on Breeze is very hard. Obviously, his ability to climb the pocket, there's a reason that he's under 6 feet tall and has existed and been generally as healthy as he has been since he tore his rotator cuff over a decade ago. So I cannot wait to see this sort of game within the game as far as that goes. I think that the Rams offense is still a work in progress to me. It goes a little bit back to what we talked about a couple of minutes ago with the preseason stuff. But I still like the running situation. I still think that Malcolm Brown can kind of plug some holes that Goff can't. So
Gurley was good last week. I mean, their running game was what you took.
He's on a pitch count, but even though Sean McVay is not on a pitch count, he's on a pitch count. Their running game was good. I think that the Saints probably win this game, though. Where are you on that?
I think it's going to be really close. I mean, the Rams at home, I feel like they absolutely could win this game. I think they're both really good teams. The Rams were underwhelming last week, but I definitely think that it's going to be close.
Do you think the Saints are going to make the playoffs yet?
I don't know. I thought Carolina looked okay. You know, we'll talk about that when we make our Thursday night pick, but you know, Carolina got some bad breaks in that game. You know, two ridiculous fumbles, you know, inside their own territory. The Rams recovered all of their fumbles. I mean, just little tiny breaks one way or the other, and that game goes differently. I thought the Carolina's defense had some moments. You know, we'll talk about Cam, I think, when we're talking about the Thursday night game. Mm-hmm. There's some concerns there, but I absolutely think Carolina's in the mix to win that division still. I mean, you lose an opener to the team that went to the Super Bowl last year from the NFC. That's not necessarily the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I agree.
One other little matchup thing that I'm going to be watching during this game, the best player on the field defensively for the Rams against Carolina was Corey Littleton.
Yeah.
He was awesome.
And McCaffrey had a nice day as a receiver, but for the most part, that stuff was coming outside the numbers when he was lined up as a receiver, like as an actual receiver. There was an angle route they ran, I think, in the third quarter that was designed to really take advantage of Littleton in space. And there was just nothing going. Cam missed with the throw a little bit, but I still think he would have made the tackle without much yards after catch. So now he deals with Kamara, which is its own sort of special challenge. But if last week is any indication, that he's really developed into an excellent coverage player, and he's going to be able to hold his own, which is impressive because most guys cannot.
I'm really excited about this game.
Yeah, me too, man. It's going to be a really fun one. Another one that I'm very much looking forward to, Vikings-Packers. Both defenses looked awesome last week. I had a really interesting conversation yesterday. I talked to David Bakhtiari for a little while for a story, and we started talking about them settling into this new offense. And you know, the way that Everson Griffin looked and the way that Danielle Hunter looked against the Falcons, I mean, they're going to be something to deal with. And not only was Rodgers in the same offense for a really long time, but Bakhtiari was too. And so were most of that offensive line. Bulaga's been there forever. And Bakhtiari had settled in so much to a certain type of offense where it's shotgun, it's three-step, it's five-step, and he can kind of understand exactly where Rodgers is going to be, what the timing is, how defenders are going to react to everything they do. And so along with Rodgers figuring this offense out, the rest of those guys are too. And it's a very different sort of approach than they've had in the past. And you kind of have to retrain your mind. And he was great against the Bears, and he's going to be great all the time. But I thought that was a really interesting observation.
Did the Sunday night game, seeing what you saw, I'm sorry, the Thursday night game, excuse me, seeing what you saw from the Packers defense and knowing that eventually Aaron Rodgers will figure it out on offense, did that change anything about the way you view them as maybe contenders or something bigger than just the NFC North?
It didn't, because I was really excited about their defense coming into the season.
Oh, so was I. That's why I picked them to win the division.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, wait, the Vikings to win the division. Sorry, I picked them to make the playoffs over the Bears.
I picked them to win the division in large part because I thought the defense would be really good. And you were excited about the Za'Darius Smith signing. I thought he was a good player. I just feel like that's the type of free agent move that can often backfire because a player steps into a different role than he's filled in the past. And it was encouraging to me to see Pettine use him inside so often in nickel situations. They would put both the Smiths on the same side. And I love that. I just think that that's a really good understanding of your personnel. And when you combine all the games they were running up front and how successful they were getting after the quarterback with the talent they have on the back end now, with Savage coming in as a rookie, Amos obviously, Alexander being a budding superstar, I just think that they have the personnel and the coaching staff and the right game plans at this point to be a really dangerous defense. So we're going to see the Vikings have a much stouter challenge than they did in week one for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the Falcons' defense was much of a challenge.
No, I mean, they ran all over them, and I do not think that's going to happen with
Green
Bay this
week. Did you see Zimmer's
quote
about, like, they were like, why'd you run so much? He's like, well, we just wanted to keep running the clock. Like, I don't know. Like, it was going fine. You don't need to pass.
That is his ideal game. If every game
well, no,
could go
but
like
I also
that,
think they just
to.
Wanted to get the game over with because they were winning by 28 points after
understandable.
Like,
I mean, they're not
going to...
They're going to throw it more than 10 times on Sunday. I can assure you that.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez.
I also think this is, again, getting back to the kind of rookie center thing. Bradbury was kind of a mess last week against Atlanta. Grady Jarrett had a big game. Now he's going up against, like we said, a Packers front that's confusing, that plays a lot of games. They use a ton of like bare fronts covering everybody up. I think that they could probably do the same thing against Minnesota because they really want to run the ball. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a similar kind of 3-3-5 five-man fronts. And I think that's going to be another significant hurdle for a rookie center to get over.
Hey, do you think Mike Pettine could be a head coach again?
I think that he absolutely could.
I agree with that. He was one of the people that I mentioned when kind of one of the side tragedies of the Browns kind of decade in hell. Mm-hmm. Was that there were so many coaches who just cycled through there, or GMs in some cases, who just cycled through there and then their careers were ruined afterwards. And so Pettine having to take a step back, going back to be DC, I think that he's rebuilding his resume. I think that defense will be really good. I don't think it'll happen in 2020, but you know, a couple of years from now.
I think it's going to be a defensive battle. I honestly do. And we'll, you know, the Packers obviously had a pretty hard time with the Bears. It's not getting any easier. You know, this Vikings defense looked excellent against Atlanta. Anthony Harris was phenomenal.
And I'm curious to see if he can sustain that, because if he can, and if Rhodes continues to look, you know, not quite like his 2017 version, but something closer to it than he was last year, you watch out. Like, this group is really talented and really well coached.
Are we not, we're not talking about the Bears at all this week?
There's no.
Okay.
Why would we?
Well, no. So I need to run this report, the Chicago Tribune report, past you. I don't know if you saw it this morning. It was last night. Concerns about Mitch Trubisky's confidence in his ability to steady a rocking boat. Well, the listener needs to hear it.
I read it.
And also, you need to hear it again.
Thanks, bud.
Concerns about Trubisky's confidence in his ability to steady a rocking boat are very real inside Hallis Hall. It's incredibly weird to say, but a week two road game against an ordinary opponent suddenly feels much heavier than it should. Next tweet. The current worry about Trubisky's headspace has created angst about what might happen if others begin to lose confidence in him. Robert Mays, are you losing confidence, Mitch Trubisky?
I wasn't sure if I wanted to make this public or admit it. I've already been starting to consider what could happen in the offseason and what they may have to do.
Why wasn't this, like, your take shop?
Because I wasn't even quite ready to throw it out there yet. Like, all right. So
we're doing double take shop. I know we're doing the NFC North discussion right now. So give us this take.
I don't even know if I want to get into this.
You've already gotten it. Craig is not taking this out. Craig's moving this to the top of the show. He's giving me a thumbs up right now.
They're up against the cap next year, like way up against the cap.
Mm-hmm.
His $9 million salary next year is guaranteed. So it becomes a little bit, you know, the wiggle room does not really exist if you want to try to move on from him. But they can free up a decent amount of cap space. You know, the cap's obviously going to go up. I think that they can probably get to $20 million, you know, fairly easily with cuts that are logical. If that's the case, who is possibly available? A guy like Ryan Tannehill, a guy like Case Keenum, a guy like Andy Dalton. Would you consider those players an upgrade over Mitchell Trubisky? I would say the answer is yes.
Yeah.
If he continues to play like this, this is all hypothetical. If he gets better, which I think he can be, against worse defenses, as that offense kind of settles in, they were completely out of sorts last week. This is all an overreaction. But I definitely started to think about, if you're on the timeline that you're on with this roster, and next year is pretty much the last year you can keep it together financially, do you owe it to yourself to make sure that you go get a quarterback that can sustain you as a contender? I started thinking about it for the first time. Again, I know it's premature, but it definitely crossed my mind for the first time this week.
The natural conclusion of this podcast in 2020 is Andy Dalton leading the Bears over Aaron Rodgers in the NFC North.
I would kill for Andy Dalton right now. The way that Andy Dalton played against Seattle last week, the way that he played for a long time last year, I would definitely love to see Andy Dalton as the quarterback of the Bears versus what they have now, 100%.
All right, let's get back to the games.
All right, our last game, a game that, you know, it doesn't have the same cachet as the other two do, but
light it up,
a game that we're very excited about. Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, Cardinals, Ravens. Let's do this, man.
So, Warren Sharp had some good numbers. He usually does, friend of the pod. The Cardinals introduced the air raid and went four wide on 67% of offensive plays and went 76% pass from 10 personnel.
Yeah!
Now, let's be clear. The funny thing that Sharp goes on to detail is that the success rate on the passes was actually not that high.
No, it wasn't.
But when they ran from it, they averaged 5.2 yards per carry.
It's almost as if running is more about how you set up a defense than it is about having these big, hulking, dominant offensive linemen all the time.
Yep. And meanwhile, he also says here, Baltimore used a ton of 12 and 21 personnel, which basically means, running backs.
Saw that coming.
Yeah, running backs and tight ends. And big people on the field. And big people on the field.
Big people.
So this is, aside from just the quarterbacks, this is going to be sort of a creativity fest. And then you get into the fact that these two quarterbacks just unironically rule. And I'm really excited for this game.
Really cool stylistic matchup. And when you consider just how far apart the offenses are. And yeah, I love the way that the Arizona offense looked just in terms of approach. I know the efficiency and the execution wasn't there all game, but David Johnson lined up out wide or in the slot on 15 snaps. Last season, he lined up out wide or in the slot 16 times, the entire season.
It's awesome. It's just, again, the execution was not to the degree that they wanted to for the first three quarters. But I do like the way they're going about this, and I'm excited to see it for the rest of the season. I think that they're going to be a fun, unique team, and I think that putting your best players in positions to succeed is the first step to being an efficient offense, and that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, I'm in. And by the way, if they're so bad that they just have to keep doing these crazy fourth quarter stuff, bring it on. I don't care if they win.
I'm in.
I don't care if they win or lose. Just give me some fireworks.
I'll be curious to see what their defense does against the Ravens, because it just seems like you're going to do everything you can to close off the middle of the field and not let them take those shots and kind of force them to run the ball. Even if it's with more two deep safety than you want to play against this team, I'll be very curious to see what the plan is from Vance Joseph and Arizona's defense, because whatever the Dolphins did last week, it was not working. So you got to do something a little bit different.
That's out there, actually.
So, game, again, it's not a great matchup in terms of like playoff implications, but it's definitely one of the games I'm most excited about watching.
Yeah, it might be like number two for me. I'd rather watch this game than I really like both the Packers and Vikings as football teams, but I kind of just want to see Lamar Jackson play.
I'm with you, actually. I feel like this is going to be a more enjoyable game to me than Packers Vikings is going to be.
All right, okay. Let's keep it moving.
All right. Maze Geeks out. Kevin, sneaky truth. Let's get to your sneaky truth first.
I'm gonna hit everybody with the John Gruden take that has, I don't think, truly ever been said in this iteration.
Oh man, I'm pumped.
John Gruden is fine. He's fine. He's not.
Yeah.
He's not the worst coach in the history of football. He's not going to save the Raiders. He's a pretty average head coach, and I think there's some problems there with that team, but. In general, you saw it on Monday, they're capable of winning games that they should win. And I think that is sort of the lesson of John Gruden. Remember, John Gruden is one of these guys. He launched the careers of basically everybody who is innovating offense at this point. And they learned it sort of at the knee of him. And so I think there's a case to be made that at some point over this 10-year contract, John Gruden can maybe put one or two good teams together. It's not going to happen anytime soon. But overall, he's fine.
I thought Derek Carr looked really, really good on Monday. I mean, that's not a hot take by any means. He was fantastic in that game and against a defense that still seems to be figuring out in Denver, but a defense with some talent on it against a really good defensive play caller. We'll see what happens. I think that the Broncos offense is an absolute mess. I think that the Raiders still have tons of question marks about their defense, but they played a lot better than I thought they would. I was surprised. I understand that he's fine thing, but he's making $10 million a year.
Oh, no. But that's the point. It's just like he's gotten essentially, even though Mayock is there, he has full control of an organization. He got $100 million. They have turned the entire organization over to basically his whims and ego. That's the problem. As a coach, he's fine. If he were a great coach, this would be more understandable. Only Belichick has more power at this point. That's the problem. As a entity standing on the sidelines, he is fine.
I'll concede that. That's fine. I'm willing to give that to you. All right. My first Geeks Out of the Year is about, we talked about it a little bit in reference to the Saints game, but I have had such a good time going back and watching the games from last week, kind of studying and observing the Saints and Chargers passing offenses to their running backs. I wrote about it a little bit today in terms of maybe Alvin Kamara being able to, you know, throw a punch in this running back debate battle that has not been thrown in terms of the value of running backs, just because he's such a good receiver and his receiving targets, it's beyond volume. They actually have value where other running back receptions are not. That's when he's used like from running back or from receiver alignments, though, I think is a huge part of that. I'm so impressed with the way they throw it to him out of the backfield, whether it's swing passes, whether it's screens, and the Chargers do the same kind of thing. They do such a good job of scheming their running backs into space out of the backfield in a way that other teams do not. You know, the Chiefs have done this for years, but I feel like the Chargers and the Saints are kind of in not the same class as Andy Reid, but definitely in the class below in terms of creating positive plays where other teams don't normally find them. So when you're watching those games, just when they show the All-22 replay of big Alvin Kamara gain, just look at how much space is created by the route distribution. And the same thing goes for the Chargers. They do such a good job of scheming ways to get those guys in tons of open grass. And I think it's a huge part of what makes them good.
I'm with you. I that's a what a geeks out. I've been waiting for that geeks out for 8 months. How does it feel to geek out?
Well, I mean, we did so much line play talk earlier in the show. I know. Feel like we had to go in a different direction.
Yeah, no. I kind of stole your bit with the Saints offensive line hype.
Well, I want to make one more point. So when it comes to the Saints or the Chargers, especially when you look at Melvin Gordon's receiving totals last year, I assume that his agent and the people that are kind of arguing for him to get paid are going to point to them and say, look at this. But when you watch what Austin Eckler did last week, and even what he did last year, it's such a testament to the design over the talent of the player. And I think that's the disconnect between a receiver like Kamara or McCaffrey and a receiver like Melvin Gordon or even Todd Gurley at times. So I think that we have to, all receptions and all receiving totals are not created equal. And I think that's important to understand.
No disagreement here.
All right, let's get to our quick pick for Thursday Night Football. The Panthers are a 7-point favorite. I'm still picking Carolina. I think that Cam did not attempt to pass over 20 yards against the Rams. We can start panicking about whether that's his shoulder, everything else. But remember, we did the same thing with Luck last year and they ended up being fine. I think that's more about trying to get rid of the ball quickly against Donald than it is anything else.
Robert, I have some bad news about Andrew Luck.
It ended up being fine last year. The Colts offense was fine last year. That's what I mean.
Yeah, I think the Bucs are terrible. I'm canceling.
I think the Bucs are bad. I think the Bucs are bad. I feel like Carolina's defense is going to be really good. I tweeted this earlier. Brian Burns should not wear 53. It's just a terrible number for a really cool player. The only worse one in the league right now is the fact that Marlon Humphrey wears 44 for the Ravens.
What was your number?
53. But I was an offensive lineman. I wasn't Brian Burns.
This is strange. You brought up that Brian Burns is wearing your number, and then you decided that you hate it. You hate it. It's a good number on you, but not Brian Burns.
Yes, I am me. I am not Brian Burns. I am not a 6'5" athletic marvel.
I mean, not with that attitude.
Can I will myself to 6'5"? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's fine.
It's very silly.
I wore 66 in football because it was the only number that reminded me of hockey, which is the sport I actually liked playing because of Mario Lemieux.
Yeah, that's a good reason.
I wore 10 in hockey.
This is a true story. The reason I wore 53 is that I stepped into an offensive line that was, rival said it was the best offensive line in the country. We had like 4 Division I players and little old me. And the only starter that was leaving, he was number 53. And I thought it would be like some weird psychological thing if nothing changed. And I wore the same number that he did. That was actually my reasoning. But I came to love it.
What happened to the other 4 guys on your line?
Two of them got drafted. Two of them got drafted, played in the league. Our right guard was cut on Hard Knocks a couple years ago with the Bengals.
Tough one.
One of them was a 4-year starter at Western Michigan at left tackle. And one of them played at Wisconsin Platteville for a while. So they all played college football. They all were pretty good at it. And then I did not.
Do you think now it was because you wore number 53?
I think that's what it was. They really locked in because they were comfortable. That was it. I was very stupid when I was 18, even dumber than I am now.
Yeah.
I guess I was 17 at that point. So again, even dumber. At least I never got mono though. There we go. So bringing it all the way around. All right, guys. Now we will get to the show, or the part of the show that most of you probably care about, and that is Kevin and I chatting with Aaron Donald about all things Rams and all things NFL.
Okay, we are joined now by perhaps the best player in the National Football League, Rams defensive lineman Aaron Donald. Aaron, thank you for joining us. I want to get started with what's different this year, because there's 2 main things I look at when it comes to you. Number one, you had your first training camp since 2016. Thought that was interesting. And then obviously you have the sort of Super Bowl hangover. If you were to think about what's different both with you and with your team from this September to last September, what is the main difference?
It's the older group, you know, you have an experience, you know, we had a lot of up and downs, but a lot of good experience that we had to make us that much of a, you know, better team. And, you know, when you go through things like that and go through adversity and things like doing a season like we did last year, I think that just makes us that much of a closer team, a stronger team, and a little bit more football smart when it comes to certain situations, come game time, and trying to find ways to win. So I think anything, I think we're a stronger team than we was.
I read a story the other day that said you woke up at 4:30 in the morning in high school to work out. What time do you wake up now? Just so we're clear.
I always go 4:30 no more, but you know, I usually wake up around 6 o'clock, 6:30. So
okay, that's still pretty early.
4:30 no more to work out. Yeah, but I just had to wake up a little earlier because you know, 4:30 we usually me and my dad wake up before I went to school in the morning in high school. So.
Yeah, no, I get that. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about your career, because one of the things I think is interesting is you were dinged for your size in an era where I think that we care about size less and less because of you. And then on the other side of the ball, you have quarterbacks getting smaller and smaller, whether that's Baker Mayfield or now Kyler Murray. Do you think that you kind of played a role in how teams view size and it not mattering as much, Aaron?
I think you can say that. You know, you're putting stuff on film, and a lot of teams are saying he's not the tallest guy or the longest guy, you know, but you put enough stuff on film to show teams that, you know, being a shorter guy in the National Football League is kind of a, you know, an upside because you got the leverage over a guy that's 6'5". So, and I always had the weight, you know, I always had the size, you know. You know, always grew up eating a lot of snacks, even pizza, you know, so, you know, I'm here to ask people and the fact to be a part of the team and, you know, grew up as a kid, level Pizza Hut. So, you know, that helped me put a little weight on. So I always had to wait, but never had the size. But I guess you could say that, you know, I opened up the doors for other guys that consider undersized for their position. So.
Aaron, it's Robert Mays. I wanted to ask you something. If I was going back and watching pretty much every sack you had last year, and it seems like so often these days, you're kind of jumping back inside after lining up as a three technique. And I know that Wade allows you guys to do stuff like that, but I'm curious about how you end up making that decision. Is that something that you typically know you're going to do before the snap even starts because of formation, or do you kind of do that midstream in the moment?
Sometimes you know because you see a formation, of sometimes it's more of a reaction thing. So it's all about what you see. Doing a play or doing a from film study that you've seen on film that you already know what happened before the play. So it's a lot of things that tie into it that, you know, help you to react or you understand what's happening before the play happens. And you're able to play fast and make plays. So
the fact that it seems like you're doing that a lot more often, do you feel like that's something that you're doing as a reaction to how guys are playing you just because they're trying to account for your speed so much that you feel like that's just something that you can kind of do as a counter? Is that something that, because I'm sure you've kind of had to learn the way that guys have dealt with you, because I'm sure you see so many different answers to the stuff that you do. Is that one of the things you felt like you've been able to lean on a little bit more?
Yes and no, because, you know, you get a lot of different blocks. You have success in the National Football League, and teams are going to find ways to try to, you know, slow you down or stop you from having that success, get them an opportunity to give that give them more opportunities to do things as far as the offense. So if I get the opportunity to make an inside move, the center's not sliding, then that's a given. You take that all day. But, you know, a lot of things I'm getting down is a hard slide with the board and a hard slide with the center. So, you know, it's all about what the team give me and what I'm seeing and whatever way I can and trying to defeat the guy in front of me.
Hey, Aaron, you know, one of the obvious sort of trends around the league now is everyone hiring from McVay tree, the joke now. Obviously, if you've met Sean McVay, you become a head coach. I want to talk about the actual Sean McVay, though, because I think people overlook him as a well-rounded head coach, as more than just an offensive system. If you were to tell somebody a Sean McVay story that maybe doesn't involve his offensive system and just more about what kind of coach he is, what kind of communicator he is, what kind of sticks out?
You know, football. I can remember, you know, the first year he was there, you know, we were sitting down, we were talking defense, and the catch up play was, you know, I think it was him and Brock communicating, and we kind of was out there, and we were kind of, you know, we were trying to understand something, and Coach McVay jumped in and knew the whole defensive scheme and broke it down, and it's like, wow, you know, I never had opportunities to, I had great coaches, but never a coach that, you know, he's an offensive mind coach, but no defense. He's able to break down a whole defensive team, understand what we're doing out there as a defense, and making all the calls like if he's a defensive mind coach. So it just shows the type of coach he is, you know, the mindset he is. He's a smart coach. When it comes to football, he's a genius. He's just one of those special guys, man, that know it all, that always trying to find ways to, you know, get himself better, get his players around him better, and you know, you got a coach like that, man, you can have a lot of success as a team, and it's been showing.
After the Super Bowl last year, I'm sure that that room is just, you know, pretty despondent. Everyone's just in a terrible mood, everything else. What was he like? How did he kind of handle himself in the immediate aftermath after that game in the locker room with you guys?
Like a professional, you know, you definitely going to be down to be that close to being a world champion and fall short. You know, it was tough, but, and I felt like he handled it a great way. You know, yeah, you got to give credit to the team that beat you. You know, you kind of put it on his shoulders and said it was on him, but, you know, it was on us as a team. You know, we just didn't execute how we needed to execute. And that team just made one more play than what we did. So, you know, he's a coach that, you know, when things ain't going bad, he don't point at the players. He take it all on himself. So when you got a coach like that, that's nonstop, he's not going to, you know, point a finger. If he won't point the finger anyway, he's going to point it at himself and try to find ways to improve and get himself better. So.
Hey, Aaron, last one from me, and then we can talk about Pizza Hut. When I look at the schedule here, I see the Saints, and you know, we talked about size early. Drew Brees is another guy who isn't prototypical size, but he gets the ball out so quickly. He has just an otherworldly connection with Michael Thomas. Is there something when you game plan for the Saints that's different because of that offense, because of Alvin Kamara, because of the way Drew Brees climbs the pocket? You might not be able to get the normal pressure you would against another quarterback.
Yeah, when you play against a good quarterback, you know, you're going to try to find ways you got to put pressure on them. You can't let them be comfortable back there. You got to be around them, make them feel you some way, somehow, because if you just hit in the pocket, it can make it be a long day for you. You know, you got so many big-time players that can do it all, and he's one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game. So when you play against a quarterback like that, you know, the main job you can is to try to bottle them up, put pressure on them, make them feel uncomfortable, make them feel on ease. So, you know, he ain't just sitting back there all day feeling comfortable and get in his mode, because once you do that, he can make it a long day for us. So for the defensive line, he can make his job, you know, hell. So.
Yeah. Aaron, tell us what you're doing with Pizza Hut.
Well, just sitting there with Pizza Hut, you know, I'm just excited to be a part of the team, one of the newest brand ambassadors. You know, grew up with Pizza Hut as a kid, so that opportunity to work with them and be a part of the team, it's a blessing. And then being an official pizza sponsor of the NFL and the Rams, for me, it just felt like it was a natural fit to have the opportunity to join them. So I'm excited about that. You know, you can play Pizza Hut at Hut Hut 1. You know, it's a sweet space for a chance to win a ping pong pizza party with me, you know, or opportunity to win millions of other prizes, you know, all season long. So cool thing that's going, you know. So for every $5 Hut Rewards member spent, spin at Pizza Hut, you earn a chance to win instant prizes. You know, you can sign up at huthutwin.com. So, it's a cool thing that Pizza Hut's doing, and I'm just happy and I'm blessed to be a part of the team. So,
awesome. Thank you so much for joining us, Aaron.
Thanks a lot, Aaron. All right. That was great. Thank you so much to Aaron Donald for joining us. We will be back on Sunday night with our week 2 recap. Until then, please enjoy your weekend. Please enjoy the Thursday night game. We will talk to you guys soon. Thank you so much for listening to the Ringer NFL Show on the Ringer Podcast Network. Today's episode is brought to you by Floor & Decor. Floor & Decor is where the pros go for tile, wood, stone, and installation materials. But the best part about Floor & Decor is their pro services and loyalty reward program. From the dedicated pro hotline to the exclusive pro app, your Floor & Decor team is just a touch away. Visit FloorAndDecor.com today to find the location nearest you.